What is it exactly you do for a living?
John Dillon, you're robbing banks.
That's a serious thing to say to a girl you just met.
I like baseball, movies, good clothes, fast cars, and you. What else you need to know?
Today, I am declaring United States of America's first war on crime.
Your task will be to get John Dillinger. Are you up to that task, Agent Purvis?
Absolutely, sir.
We are pursuing hardened killers.
Play a game, Mr. President. It's called spin the dial.
That's your money, mister?
Yes.
We're here for the bank's money, not yours. Put it away.
Now the whole country thinks you're a damn hero.
We're robbing banks is getting tougher.
We're having too good a time today. We ain't thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah, well, you ought to.
Put some clothes on, miss.
They're extraditing you.
Where to?
Indiana.
Why?
I have absolutely nothing I want to do in Indiana.
Johnny, how long did it take you to go through a bank?
About 1 minute, 40 seconds. Flat.
Well, here's a man who killed pretty boy Floyd.
The only way that you would leave a jail cell is when we take you out to execute you.
Well, we'll see about that.
John Dillinger has given us a second chance to get John Dillinger.
He can be anywhere.
Where are you going?
Anywhere I'm on. We're too good for him. They ain't tough enough, smart enough, or fast enough. I hit any bank I want anytime. They got to be at every bank all the time.
We can get out of here all together.
You want to take that ride with me?
Yeah, I want to take that ride with you. Hello
and welcome to the pod. It's Film Club time and today it's Public Enemies. Joining me again is Tim Hewitt. Coming up day after tomorrow, Bonnie and Clyde in a crime movie double bill. Next month's Film Club is Schindler's List. Roger Morehouse joins. But until then, I'm going to hand you over to Tim and I talking Public Enemies. The Michael Mann movie starring Johnny Depp, Christian Bale and Marion Cotillard. Tim, welcome. So, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
You're returning because you were actually substituted.
I was, yes.
Episode. Yes.
But I'm glad you found a replacement.
Yes, a very good replacement.
A suitable.
And for listeners, before you all think, oh my God, we're back to the boring old partnership. And next month, we will all three of us, Roger Morehouse, who was on for Conspiracy, will be joining Tim and I to talk Schindler's List. So I'm afraid we will be delving back into that horrific subject of the Holocaust next month in March. But I think very apt that we do, given the rise of anti-Semitism that we've been seeing in the last few months. So that's certainly what we should be doing. But today, let's move on to today. Today, we've got a bit of a crime double bill. So this episode is on Public Enemies, the Michael Mann film. And then a day after tomorrow, it will be Bonnie and Clyde. So it'll be a double bill. And these are the February Film Club. We're doing a double bill because we're very generous. And these two go very well together. And in actual fact, the first film that we're discussing, Public Enemies, Michael Mann, that is based on a book that actually includes Bonnie and Clyde, but they chose not to use the Bonnie and Clyde storyline in Public Enemies, in the film Public Enemies, which is basically the story of John Dillinger.
Not to be confused with Public Enemy with James Cagney.
No.
It was made a long time ago.
Exactly. Yes, this is in colour, made in 2009, and as you say, Michael Mann. So it's, you know, he's known for, well, his probably most I don't know if it's most famous, but Heat, big heist movie.
Yeah, that's kind of everyone's favorite cult classic Michael Mann film. I differ slightly. I know this is sacrilege to people in the film industry, but my personal favorite Michael Mann film is, in fact, a film called, which I think I will plug to be on this podcast, is The Insider with Al Pacino and Russell Crowe about the whistleblower in the tobacco industry, which I think is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's with Russell Crowe as well.
Right, Russell Crowe, Michael Mann, Christopher Plummer. And Michael Mann's made actually quite a few. He made the first Hannibal Lecter film.
With Brian Cox.
Yes, with Brian Cox.
Manhunter,
who plays Hannibal Lecter. And he co-created Miami Vice.
Last of the Mohicans.
He directed Last of the Mohicans, and then he directed the film Miami Vice, which is a bit underrated, I think. It's actually quite good, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's really good.
And he did this, Public Enemies, obviously. And he did a great film, I think, with Tom Cruise called Collateral.
That is very good. A great film.
I think it's really good, yeah.
Okay.
I think Tom Cruise is very good in it. He's cast against type, playing the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I think he's really convincing, and I think it's a really good film. It's visually really, really nice.
I think he's got a couple of other movies of his. He made Ali.
With Will Smith. He was very good, actually, in that film.
Yeah.
But I didn't think the film was great, some of his other films.
And actually, I think it's impossible for Will Smith to portray someone so just charismatic. He's like, there's no one more charismatic than Muhammad Ali.
Mm.
So Will Smith, I'm afraid, just...
Yeah. Well, now...
now...
Post a certain slap, he's definitely not that charismatic.
No. He's put on a bit of weight as well. It's all a bit depressing. Anyway, let's get on with Public Enemies. Now, this is starring Johnny Depp as John Dillinger, the notorious bank robber.
And Christian Bale as Melvin Purvis, the guy on his tail.
So this is sort of A-list casting. Yeah. And then Billy Frechette is played by Marion Cotillard. She's the love interest of Dillinger. And this is a true story, of course. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on the Aspects of History podcast. Yeah. And this is all about... So just for listeners' sake, this is just setting the scene. This is the early 1930s. And we've had the Wall Street crash, which then brought on the Great Depression. And so there was a huge amount of poverty throughout the United States. And so these bank robbers, such as John Dillinger, Babyface Nelson, Pretty Boy Floyd, and Bonnie and Clyde, they all kind of epitomized, I guess, they became very popular, or at least caught the public imagination. And so because they were obviously sticking it to the man, I suppose, they were, I think Dillinger was presented as some kind of Robin Hood figure in that he stole from the rich. I think semi Robin Hood. He stole from the rich, but he didn't get round to giving it to the poor.
Not quite.
No. But
they were sort of a celebrity status. Because of, I mean, I've always wondered how much were outside the Depression, was there a marked decrease in the amount of bank robbers, or are they highlighted as being particularly special during the Depression? And the Depression is the excuse. Well, it's very poor. Everyone, you know, it was almost like they had no choice. This is what they did. Or are these people just pretty vile people and would have robbed banks no matter what?
Well, I think it's actually a bit serendipitous because, you have the Great Depression. I think you get the rise of newsreels, which is actually shown in the movie where they go to the pictures, to the theatre, to watch the news. And so you're getting that rise of mass media. And then you've got this, I don't know about you, I've always found going into a bank and robbing a big multinational corporate entity quite romantic.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about shooting, you know, the poor old bank teller or the or even you know, the customer, but just the whole general, you know,
it's the courage and just the complete outside the norm. I don't know. Yeah, you may be right. That's why maybe we get a thrill every time we see a bank robbery in a film.
Heist movies are just wonderful, aren't they?
They're just brilliant. You know, Oliver Stone actually took that idea even further in his film Natural Born Killers, where they're sort of revered and become media sensations, these serial killers. And it's kind of like maybe not really it's a very old concept. And as you can see from these guys, Bonnie and Clyde, I think, were the same, you know, had that same kind of celebrity status about them. In fact, I think we'll get to it with Bonnie and Clyde, but I think a bunch of fans, you know, gather around a car to want autographs and photographs.
Well, I think it helps if you look at pictures of Dillinger. I mean, he's a good looking guy.
Yeah.
And he was only 31, 32 as well. So he's young.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I suppose you're a bit older. People grew up quicker in those days. But
yeah, that's true.
And this is just speaking about the performances. I mean, there are plenty. It really is. I think does this count as an ensemble cast for you, Tim? Because
I think in some ways it does, because there's the gang, that involve, for example, one of my favorite character actors around today, who's Australian, Jason Clarke. He is great. He was, I think we probably mentioned him in Oppenheimer. He's in a lot of character-led films. He's in Zero Dark Thirty, a Catherine Bigelow film, which is actually quite good, with Jessica Chastain. He tends to play Americans, except there's also a great film, ensemble film called Everest, about the climb to Everest, where he plays a New Zealander. And he's one of the gang, along with Stephen Graham.
So just to interrupt you there, Tim, he plays John Hamilton, Red Hamilton.
Yeah, Red Hamilton.
He was Dillinger's best friend.
We've got Stephen Graham, who is now making a name for himself playing mafioso Italian-American criminals, who plays Babyface Nelson. And David Wenham, who's a New Zealander, I think. He was in Lord of the Rings. He plays Harry Pierpont. Really
good.
It's
Sean Bean's brother in Lord of the Rings.
Exactly. Faramir. And
I just had to mention Sean Bean.
Yes, we always mention him if you can. And Stephen Dorff, who's, I think, a really good character actor as well, who's in this. I think it could be an ensemble at a lot of points of the film. I mean, there's a lot of concentration, obviously, on Dillinger and his relationship with Marion Cotillard. And Giovanni Ribisi pops up, who I think is a great character actor. A lot of people will know him as Phoebe's brother in Friends, but he's a great actor. He's a great straight character actor.
Yeah, he plays the medic in Saving Ryan.
One of the best death scenes in that. He does it so well. I mean, he does it so well. He's brilliant.
Bill Camp. Now, film was made in 2009. Bill Camp's, you see a lot more of him now. He's a great character actor.
And there's a very brief early role from Channing Tatum.
Yes. Pretty Boy Floyd.
Yeah, Pretty Boy Floyd, who there's a great chase through a orchard that Christian Bale's on his heels. And Billy Crudup plays J. Edgar Hoover, who's very good. It's got a really good kind of character cast, I think.
Indeed. So, but this is really a Johnny Depp film.
Yes. I mean, of course. I mean, he sold the film.
He's brilliant.
He's brilliant. He's brilliant in it. We were talking actually before that this was one of his last roles where he didn't play just flamboyant, crazy, nuts, cartoonish with a strange voice. I thought, Jack Sparrow's brilliant. It was a unique character, but his Wonka, his Alice Through the Looking, you know, all of these kind of crazy characters that he played. Now he's sort of disappeared slightly, hasn't he, because of all his personal troubles. But
I think he's been cancelled. He was in a French film.
Oh, yes, he was. Directed by the lead woman who's in the film. The name escapes me. But this was a really good performance, actually. It was kind of straight. He's somewhat terrifying at times, but very likable. He's charming, which I guess is exactly what we were talking about, you know, what you need, what Dillinger probably was to gain this kind of public persona. Yeah, and it's almost like a joyride through the film for his character. It's all very, he starts singing to his hostage in the car. I remember when he takes that woman. Very charming.
Michael Mann is the master of heist movies, isn't he? After Heat and this.
Yeah, I guess
so. No? No? Okay.
He's done a couple of good heist films.
You're filming a heist movie now, aren't you? Is it a heist movie?
It's not really a heist movie, no. It's a crime film.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there's no actual heist in the film.
Okay, okay. Christian Bale, who we haven't really mentioned that much yet, it's Cops and Robbers, so he's chasing Dillinger. And this
he's the Al Pacino to Johnny Depp's De Niro in this.
Yes. So Bale, he brings that usual intensity to the role, doesn't he?
He was established. He'd done American Psycho.
He's done Batman as well.
Yes, he had. That's true. He'd done Batman. I want to say, though, that this was, you know, he's a supporting character in this more than a lead.
Yeah, if you look at the poster, it's got Johnny Depp all over it.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say that his character, Purvis, is fully rounded. Like for example, if you were to use the De Niro Pacino comparison in Heat, that's very much a film about the two sides of the same coin. You know, they're opposites, but they have a lot of similarities. It's a very big sort of a character study. This doesn't have that depth to it, I don't think, in terms of that comparison. So it's not, you know, we're not following Bale's character really as much.
No, you don't see his personal life. He doesn't go home and rip a telly off the out of the kitchen and throw it onto us.
Exactly. Or kick it out of the car in the street. So it's very much more Depp's bio. But he's good. I mean, Bale's solid and very, very, you can see, very determined. You know, steadfast determination to find this guy. Have one scene together, I think, is that actual one dialogue scene where Depp's behind bars. It's kind of taunting him, saying, "Oh, I'm going to get out." And he's like, "Oh, really?" Which is, it's nice to see them together. I mean, it's, but it is very much, you know, on the hunt.
Is that the only time they've acted together?
I think so. Yeah.
It's almost like passing a baton then, in a way. Because Johnny Depp is just brilliant. I mean, he's done so many brilliant performances, particularly in the 90s.
Yeah, amazing.
I think for you and I, at our age group, late 40s, for us, I would say Johnny Depp in the 90s. I've always found him more of a... I was more interested in him than someone's like Tom Hanks, who got a lot of accolades.
But Tom Hanks is, yes.
I wouldn't say Tom Hanks is cool.
No, but Tom Hanks is just endlessly likable. He's the everyman. You know, he's so watchable that you know, it'd be nice. Apart from, I don't know if you've seen Cloud Atlas, which is a film where the actors in it play multiple characters in different time periods. That's probably the only time I've seen Tom Hanks play an absolute bastard, like a horrible character. But it's not something you see. Whereas Depp is, you know, he can do Benny and June, which is such an amazing, loving, lovable character. And then he can do this. He can do Donnie Brasco. And then he'll do Jack Sparrow.
My favorite Johnny Depp film is Dead Man.
Dead Man is really good, yeah.
Jim Jarmusch movie.
Jim Jarmusch. The black and white. Kind of Western type thing. Yeah, it's great.
Sort of Neo, where he plays William Blake. He's confused with the poet. It's a wonderful film. And then he's very good in Ed Wood.
Which is my personal favourite Tim Burton film.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape? I can see why it is, actually.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape? You know, it's something as crazy as Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. He's just wild. And I mean, he's unpredictable. He obviously wants to stretch himself and think outside the box. And he always has. You know, he's never become the leading man star. Pure, just a star. You know, he's tried to veer himself into character acting, which commendable.
He could have been a star, couldn't he? There was a period in the 90s. Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's testament for someone who, I think at the read-through of Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, he just did what he did. And the producers were kind of like, what are you doing? And, you know, he kind of proved everyone wrong. But
I've only seen the first one, and he's by far the best thing about it.
Absolutely. I mean, without him, it would have been just a bit mediocre. He's very good in this. He's, as I was saying earlier, he borders on kind of terrifying but charming. You know, even when he confronts Marion Cotillard, the coat check, and says, basically, you're coming with me. And she's like, well, I don't know you. And then the guy, the other guy turns up and is like, can you get my coat? And he's, and you're like, uh-oh. He's really good. I was going to say, it's not the sort of film that does particularly well these days, though. Tommy Guns in the 30s, these kind of 30s gangster films don't really do, or it's not that they necessarily don't do well, it's just that they're not made very often. It is a shame. And I'm wondering whether, I mean, I'm not totally sure, we'll get on to how it did.
We can get on to it now.
We can do it now.
It cost $100 million to make, and it made globally $214 million.
Yeah, so it's not bad.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. I think Johnny Depp is a key ingredient there.
Yeah.
And Marion Cotillard.
Marion Cotillard, she's fantastic.
It's a good example of maybe how it could work. I'm just not sure that a film like this with a lesser known cast would necessarily do particularly well.
Yeah, it helped having Batman in it.
Yes, that's very true. So Jack Sparrow and Batman, basically.
But I think, you know, we've mentioned Marion Cotillard, but she had just played Edith Piaf and
won an Oscar for it.
Yeah. And which I don't know if any listeners have seen this, but I highly recommend.
Yeah, it's really great. It's so really good film.
Yeah, she's quite wonderful in it.
And I think this is pretty historically accurate, as far as I can tell. I think there are certain things that they miss. You know, they need to condense stuff, which I think is pretty reasonable. But
if you look at a picture of the three main cast members and then the people that they're playing, they look actually quite similar. Mm-hmm. So it is very well. It's obviously cast with that in mind. And I think Dillinger definitely, there's a resemblance with Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp described during the research, he looked into his family history and he says, I mean, you never know quite what to believe with Johnny Depp, because he's famously, he traces Native American ancestry. So that's obviously very important to him. But he did mention that his grandfather or his great grandfather had a difficult life in the early 30s and had been convicted of a crime, or an uncle had been convicted of a crime. So he definitely felt that kind of, I don't know if it was a rage or something, but it's at least a motivating factor behind these robbers.
Yeah.
So Johnny Depp was obviously really into this kind of job.
I was just thinking, actually, talking about historically, actually, there was a bit of trivia that I found out, that the shootout at the lodge, when you're watching the film, you could go, oh, is this true?
Yeah, it looks like a set.
It does. But the thing is that you go, oh, he gets away. Oh, that's, you know, in real life, maybe, no matter how iconic Dillinger is in the public persona, he surely, have they taken license? Because he could have died in that. I mean, everyone should have died. It's a crazy shootout. But of course, he didn't. He got away. But what they found out apparently when they were shooting it was that the date that the shootout took place was the same date they were shooting the actual scene. And I'm not sure that was deliberate. Well, it wasn't deliberate, because scheduling is a nightmare. So that's very historically accurate. Talking about sets, you know, I have one thing, just going into the technical side of the film, there's one thing that slightly bothers me about it, that it's a artistic choice that Michael Mann made, is that I think it's his first film that he shot digitally.
But I was going to ask you about this. So it looks like a sort of TV movie.
Yeah, I was about to say, there are certain shots more than others, but
I don't mean the shots that he's taking. I mean the entire picture, color.
Yeah, the texture.
Yes.
Look a bit TV sometimes. But very much in that shootout. It's like, to the point where I was like, oh, are there some shots they've done with an iPhone? It's kind of, yeah, and I don't know why, because it's period. And of all the things in all the films maybe in the world you'd want to look beautifully cinematic is something in the 30s. Whereas, I don't know, I'm not sure about whether I like it or not.
I watched this just, you know, the weekend before we're recording now. So I watched it, and I think this would be the third or the fourth time I've seen it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't bother me now. But when I first watched it gives it a kind of cheap look.
Yeah. I agree.
Which, and if the thing it cost is, 100 million to make.
Yes. Well, let's be honest, 25 of that is probably Depp's salary. 15 or so is probably Christian Bale's. Marion Cotillard probably got about, you know, 10 or something.
Really? She should get. So she's just won Best Actress Oscar. And she's not yes, on but, the same but billing
it,
as the men.
But here we go. This is a different conversation that I'm on board with you. It's crazy. But I guess, you know, she doesn't have as much screen time as Depp.
And she doesn't have the box office under her, box office earnings under her belt that
Well, yeah, I know. Maybe it's just. But proportionally, she should be paid. You know,
yeah, she should be. She should be. I think
she's billed above the title, as far as I can. I've got the DVD actually here, but
I think I'm agreed with you, of course. So I think we both. Well, she's on equal billing with Christian Bale. Okay,
right. So they should get the same.
Yeah. Now, recently, I heard a complaint about. I think it. Who was it? It was someone complaining that it was Samantha Morton complained. Mm-hmm. About Minority Report. Now, if you remember Minority Report, sci-fi film, she spends most of the film in a bath, looking up at a ceiling and
predicting the future.
Yeah, so she's not got a big role, and she is. I was reading an interview the weekend where she complained that she didn't get the same salary as Colin Farrell in that film. Now that. That film was made in, I think, 2005, 04, I'd say, Spielberg. By then, Colin Farrell had a number of starring roles in Hollywood.
Had he?
SWAT, Tigerland.
Yeah, but they weren't...
Phone Booth. These films made a lot of money.
I know, but had he done Phone Booth? I don't...
Yeah, he had.
Minority Report was very early in his career, wasn't it?
Okay,
but the thing is that Tigerland, yes, he was the lead, but was that a massive?
That's what made him big.
Because I thought
Phone Booth cemented it. Right. Okay. So and The Recruit, not forgetting The Recruit. Okay. So 2001,
which came after Minority Report. Though.
So he did Tigerland in 2000. American Outlaws 2001, Hearts War 2002. Then he did Phone Booth, Recruit, SWAT in 2003. And so he's got all those plus Daredevil. Then in between those, he does Minority Report.
Well, so Minority Report, I think, was done before Phone Booth. He actually did it for, like, that was his first massive.
Colin Farrell filmography.
So Minority Report came.
It doesn't have the list of his fucking.
On IMDb.
Yeah, I prefer Wikipedia because it gives you details.
But anyway,
Oh yeah, fair enough. Okay, we'll just cancel all that. We'll just remove the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, are we going to talk about? Are you going to talk about Samantha Morton, or is it? Forget it.
No, because it's irrelevant now.
Ah, okay, forget it.
Although I still think he was a bigger star by then. Than her.
Well, yeah, but that absolutely he was. But the thing is I don't think average Joe, when they were watching Minority Report, would go, "Oh, that's the guy from Tigerland." I don't think anyone really saw Tigerland that much. That's why when I remember vividly when Minority Report came out and Colin Farrell was in it, I was like, "Who's that?" Firstly,
really?
Who's that? Yeah, and secondly,
oh, I knew exactly who it was.
Really. And he just, it was like, oh my God, he got that film with Steven Spielberg plays the antagonist at that age. But the thing is, Samantha Morton did have a lot more to do when his Cruise takes her out and go and takes
her. Well, he carried her.
Yeah, but then she's, you know, like she's doing a bit of acting. I mean, quite good. I think she was quite good.
I think she's a bit overrated. I know she's just been given a BAFTA for Lifetime Achievement.
I agree. She is a bit overrated. She's a bit weird.
Yeah, I think that helps.
She grew up in a care home.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, now, don't I sound like the bastard?
Yeah. She's like, you know, come on. Anyway, where were we before all of this?
Oh, okay. Samantha Morton-based hate rant.
Marion Cotillard's salary. So we talked about that.
Right. So should we get on to our categories?
Yeah, have we talked enough about the historical stuff?
Well, no, because there are a number of problems with it historically. For example, mm-hmm. the beginning of the movie, you get this shootout, which didn't happen.
When he's taken out of jail?
Yes.
Oh, that didn't
he
happen.
He returns to release his buddies, one of whom dies in his arms being dragged from a car.
James Russo.
Never forget James Russo, great guy. Yeah, but mm-hmm. Beverly Hills Cop.
Mm-hmm. Donnie Brasco.
Yeah. Brilliant actor.
Open Range plays the marshal in Kevin Costner's Western. Brilliant performance.
So he dies in Johnny Depp's arms, and it's very upsetting for Dillinger. But that guy actually spent the rest of his life in prison and died in the 1970s.
Yes, yeah, a bit of license there. But it's a good opening.
And then at the end of the film, the other emotional point, which really got me up, so much so that I cried.
Right.
When at the end of the film, so I don't think this is a spoiler. The film's been out. John Dillinger, it was always going to end in his death, really. Mm-hmm. And we should talk a bit about the FBI's flagrant disregard of due process in the judicial process.
Yeah.
But anyway, Dillinger is effectively executed, leaving a movie theater, having just seen the Clark Gable film, Manhattan Melodrama, a crime film starring Clark Gable. He's just left the theater watching that, having been affected by it. Anyway, he's then brutally gunned down. And as he's dying, the FBI agent who shot him leans down and listens to what he's whispering. And what they do get right is where he was shot and all that, and the number of times he was shot.
That's all accurate.
And then he whispers his last dying words, and the FBI agent lies to Melvin Purvis, played by Christian Bale, says, "Oh, I didn't catch what he said," but he did. And he returns to prison where Marion Cotillard is imprisoned. And he says, "I've come to tell you something." And he says that John Dillinger's last words were, "Bye bye, Blackbird." Very upsetting. I had tears coming down. I did.
Who's the FBI played by Stephen Lang?
Love Stephen Lang.
Who's great. Yeah, whether that happened or not, we don't know.
It didn't happen.
No, didn't. Of course not. But, you know, it's...
my point being, the two rather emotional parts of the film, the beginning and the end, where they kind of get you emotionally, you know, it shows Dillinger has feelings. It's not a ruthless bank robber. It turns out that didn't actually happen.
Yeah, it's a shame. But, you know, you need a bit of...
Of course you do, but I bet you there are times... I don't know. This is where it's always difficult. But I bet you there are times in his life where he did show true emotion that, you know... But well, I get it. It's a story arc. It's how the filmmakers have to do it. It's not a documentary.
Well, the interesting thing is, like, talking about now, going back to his death, you know, there was no attempt at capturing him. You know, it was just kill him as soon as he comes out.
Yeah, you get a lot of this in, you know, I think Pretty Boy Floyd and...
I mean, and a great parallel between this and Bonnie and Clyde, of course.
Yeah.
Where it was almost the authorities were like, oh, you know, screw this. Just... You know, this has been going on for too long.
Well, just a little bit of historical context is that this is before the establishment of a federal judicial system.
Well, the Hoover was kind of on the rise, wasn't he? With
it wasn't even called the FBI then.
No.
And they didn't have cross-state authority. And it's interesting because you get the mafia involvement played by Frank Nitti, played by Bill Camp.
Bill Camp, yes. Love Bill Camp.
And Frank Nitti... he's played very accurately in this. Sharp-eared listeners may recognize the name Frank Nitti from the film Untouchables, Brian De Palma, where Frank Nitti is the right-hand man to Al Capone, who is thrown off a building by Elliot Ness, played by Kevin Costner. He plays a sort of different type of Frank Nitti.
Like a really evil Frank Nitti.
Well, I don't think the Frank Nitti of this film, of Public Enemies, is a nice guy.
He
plays a more accurate role in that he's a big boss. I think he took over Al Capone's organization whilst Capone was in prison for income tax evasion. And Bill Camp is explaining to this sort of lower down capo in the mafia that all these bank robberies are meaning that we're going to come under pressure from an organized federal police force, i.e. the FBI. Mm. So we've got to stop helping them. And that's very accurate and really well done.
So this is like, so pre-FBI, but the fact that they, you know, that their plan was not to capture him, it's almost like they've become sick of it.
Yeah, it was all a bit tedious, all this police work. Let's just shoot him.
Yeah, well, exactly. Same could be said with Bonnie and Clyde, because they knew exactly where they were going to be.
Yes. If you look at all the characters that were part of Dillinger's gang, I think they all, apart from one, are killed. I think by all accounts, Babyface Nelson was a psychopath.
And how much do you really want them to get him in this film? I mean, I like Stephen Graham, but, you know, he's the only character really in the film where I'm like, please get him. Please just shoot him.
But it adds to the romanticism. If Dillinger had then been put away for 30 years, it's not quite it's better to go out.
Guns blazing.
I mean, this is what is depicted in the film, where he's watching Manhattan melodrama, and Clark Gable pretty much says this in the film, you know, better to have lived your life. And Depp looks at the screen and he sort of smiles to himself. Mm. Yeah, so I think there was a certain fatalism behind it for the bank robbers.
The complete opposite of the way of what when Johnny Depp plays Whitey Bulger in Black Mass, you know, who lives to whatever, however old he was, and then is killed in prison, horribly killed in prison, actually. But
And Whitey Bulger slipped away from the mafia scene in Boston and went to live in California.
Yeah, it was for years.
He was found, I think he was taking out the rubbish.
And Santa Monica, yeah.
Yeah.
On the FBI's Most Wanted.
Yeah, I quite like that film.
The Depp, actually, interesting performance, except he's doing a little bit of, you know, performing behind a character. But yeah, it's another discussion.
Yeah, I mean, he's done that Blow. He's very good in Blow as well.
Penelope.
Similar kind of role. Right, okay, so let's do our scenes. The best, we'll start off with a Zapruder Award for best scene. Well, I mean, I had a few, but I loved the scene where he escaped from prison using the fake gun.
Gun, yeah.
Which is true, he did carve the fake.
That's very good.
And in fact, I think I was doing a bit of research into it. Michael Mann said he managed to kidnap a lot more policemen than he did in the scene. But it just looks so unbelievable that they actually toned back the reality.
Right, right.
Which I think, you know, well done, Michael Mann. But so there's that scene. I think the bank robbery scene when he's first escaped from prison. After the first escape, he robs the bank with his sort of trusted lieutenants, jumps up, and he, I think, repeats the line, or close to the line you see in Heat, which is, we're after the bank's money, not yours.
Yeah, not yours. Don't be a hero. I have another a scene that's not actually with Johnny Depp in the scene, which is...
Well, me too.
Okay. Which is when Bale goes and meets Babyface for the first time, where he's eating and he's like, I'm a shoe salesman. And you're like, this is a bit dodge. And then he goes out and then Babyface Nelson kind of comes out and shoots the cop. And then he races. It's a really tense scene.
Yeah, a lot of tension there. Very good. I think I cried. So I'm going to have to mention the final scene with Stephen Lang, or the where he repeats the last words of Dillinger. Bye bye, Blackbird.
Okay.
She's really good in it. The woman she played.
I'll actually go for also the scene where he goes to the coat check and says, you're with me. And the guy comes and is like an impatient and says, get my coat. And
yeah, that's
I think it's actually quite a good scene.
I mean, Billie Frechette, who was the real life girlfriend of Johnny Depp, she was part Native American and returned to reservation and lived out her days there. Having served, I think, 3 years in prison for helping. He had this, I think he did have this charm that meant people helped him. Which,
yes, understandable.
I don't think you could say that about Babyface Nelson.
No.
Who makes an appearance in the Coen Brothers' Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, yes, he does indeed. That's so true.
Yeah. Okay, so what are we going to go for best scene? I think if I had to, Tommy gun to my head, I would say Marion Cotillard and Stephen Lang scene at the end.
Okay. That's a very short scene, but yes, okay.
But you would agree with that?
Perfectly reasonable.
Okay.
Willing to agree.
Right, next is the big one, the performance, the best performance. What are our nominations?
Well, it'd be weird not to nominate Johnny Depp.
The Simon Baker Award for best
Simon Baker Award.
I've got to go with, it's either him or Marion Cotillard.
Yeah, she's really good in it.
I think the thing is, because I love Johnny Depp, and he is so good in this, but I've got a thing for Marion Cotillard, mm-hmm. so I'm going to go with her.
Oh, okay.
To make our first ever female winner of
the best. Regardless of performance, you're going because it's
I'm saying that she's fantastic in it.
Yeah.
Well, there is a period where she's actually not in the film because she's been arrested by the FBI and they treat her very badly.
Yes. She's very good in those scenes. She's so good in those scenes. Yeah, I agree. Okay, let's go with Marion Cotillard.
Exactly. That's what won the award for me, when she's being tortured effectively by the FBI.
Yeah, horrible. We forgot to mention that an actress that makes an appearance, a very small cameo role, is Carey Mulligan.
Yes, she does. She was very not well known at that stage.
I think it was early. Sort of, I guess. She done an Education? I think maybe. I can't remember the year. But yes, so Marion Cotillard.
Okay, and then next, we got the Argo Award for Most Inaccurate Scene.
Well, both the beginning and your favourite scene.
Yeah, and then also the other scene we just talked about, the torture scene. She wasn't actually tortured. However, the FBI did behave very badly, and there were other detainees or people in custody who recounted acts of torture. Yeah.
But in terms of the actual event, I mean, the opening is blatant.
Scene, whilst thrilling as it is and involves lots of machine gun fire, no one was killed in the breakout. And the prisoner who is killed, played by James Russo, died, I wouldn't say happily ever after. He was in prison, but died peacefully. So we'll go with the opening scene.
Okay.
Next, we got the Gary Oldman Award for Best Supporting Performance. So the nominations are Christian Bale,
Stephen Graham,
Jason Clarke.
Yes,
and then
be tricky.
And then, but then one actor who I think is really, really good is Ranka Katic, who's a Serbian actress, and she plays the brothel owner who betrays Dillinger to the FBI, and she's very good in it as well.
Oh yes, she is very good actually. That's tricky.
I think Christian Bale. See, I'm not going to go with Christian Bale because it's a little bit of a.
It's just not doesn't stretch him.
No,
he's very good. His accent, but occasionally it feels a little. I've just said with all due, I think I love Christian Bale. I think he's very good, but it's a little bit monotone sometimes. Just a bit on the same cadence, kind of same note.
A late shout out for Billy Crudup as.
I think Billy Crudup should be definitely in there because he's a really good actor. I don't know if he's doing a full on imitation of Hoover, but he gets the essence of Hoover, I think,
quite well. Yeah, I mean, Hoover. There's a very good scene in the Senate hearing where the senator embarrasses Hoover by asking if he's ever arrested someone.
Yeah, it's a really good scene.
Now Hoover was embarrassed by the fact that he had never arrested someone, so much so that he asked to be taken to a operation where they were going to arrest their perpetrator. And he appeared last minute to enact the arrest just so he could then later say, I arrested someone. so this sort of staged arrest does highlight the ego and Hoover. Amazing. He was in charge of the FBI for so long. Extraordinary, really. He's in charge of the FBI for 37 years.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then.
Oh, sorry, no, 48 years if you include the predecessor of the FBI, which is just crazy. He had a lot of dirt on a lot of people.
I'm vaguely veering towards Stephen Graham because actually it's quite a prominent performance and he dominates. And he dominates. I mean, it's such a colourful character that you kind of don't forget it.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go with, he's brilliant in it. He really is. So Stephen Graham. Right, and then, so that just leaves our legacy rating. What's the legacy of Public Enemies?
Interesting, because it's out of Michael Mann's body of work, it's not one that crops up, I think, in the people, I mean, no, Heat all, everyone's like, heat. It's the sort of film where people go, oh yeah, I forgot about that one, actually. That yeah, I remember seeing it when it first came out. I haven't seen it since, type thing.
You know, one thing that we haven't mentioned as well, though, the writer, one of the co-writers is Ronan Bennett. Now, Ronan Bennett is an Irish writer. Interesting to start with. He also wrote Top Boy, which is on Netflix, which is doing really, really well. It's been described as the British Wire, The Wire.
I have a family member who is raving about it.
I mean, The Wire is much better than Top Boy. The Wire's like the, up there with The Sopranos. So it's difficult for Top Boy to reach that, but it is brilliant. So well done, Ronan Bennett.
That's excellent.
But having written this as well, it's quite impressive.
Yeah, co-written with Michael Mann and
yeah.
So legacy. When people ask, Dillinger in film, there's the film Dillinger, which is a good film, which was made years ago. But do people immediately remember Public Enemies as a prominent film that deals historic, that is based in history, but I don't know, has a lasting...
I think it's pretty low down, I'm afraid. I mean, it did made a lot of money and it's got a great cast and it's done very well, but it hasn't, it didn't get any awards, not nominated for anything.
No.
Best picture winner that year was The Hurt Locker. I'm not sure The Hurt Locker's that great. I think maybe it's American guilt over the Iraq War, which is why that one.
Yeah. I think it's a well-crafted film, but I remember thinking that year was crazy, actually.
Avatar.
Yeah.
Other nomination. District 9, very good. And Education.
There's a major one.
Inglourious
Basterds. There are two major ones, actually. Inglourious Basterds, in my opinion, it was bizarre, should have won Best Screenplay, and The Hurt Locker won. I mean, Best Screenplay, The Hurt Locker. You know, no, I don't think so. Inglourious Basterds should have won Best Screenplay.
It should have. It's one of Tarantino's. I mean, Tarantino's not made a bad film, but...
It was a little strange. So... Public Enemies, yes. I don't think it's very high.
I think we'll have to give it 2 out of 5.
Okay, 2 out of 5.
I think that's it. That's it, Public Enemies. So coming up next in 2 days' time, it is Bonnie and Clyde. Tim, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to Bonnie and Clyde.